Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 4 of the Box Set Pod. I've got a challenge for you. Something I've noticed recently is that friends of mine and people who listen to the Box Set Pod, they often go to the interviews of they judge which episode to listen to based on what they're interested in, which seems like a sensible thing to do. You look for the box set that you already know or the famous person's name you recognise. But some other people have realised that by listening to other ones, you realise, oh, actually, the other ones are fun as well. So do have a browse around, listen to ones that are outside your subject zone, because the point of this podcast is to recommend things that you haven't seen yet and also to try and be entertaining.
So your challenge is to listen to them all.
Yes. Browse around, have a listen to a couple of others, and I'm sure you'll enjoy them as well. Welcome to the Box Set Pod. Yes, Season 3, Episode 4. Today we are going to be joined by a very special guest, Ollie. He is a film reviewer for Empire Magazine. You might have seen him all over the place doing things. He's very good.
He's very good at reviewing films and such like.
I've got a question to ask him about comedy. I've got a criticism of reviewers. Critics. I've got a theory that critics don't like comedies as much.
I've got a theory
of why that is.
But you know, I think it's harder to judge comedies.
Yeah, I think it's harder to make a good comedy, and I think it's harder to judge a good comedy.
I think it's hard to judge because I think sense of humour is something that is very subjective.
Yes.
And, sorry, objective.
Yes.
That's what I'm looking for. And I think that's why critics struggle more with that than any other genre of film, and they get it wrong so many times. Anchorman in Empire Magazine.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell Ollie this later. Got 3 stars.
Wow.
I mean, seriously.
Which one? The first one?
Yeah, the first one.
Jeez. Well, we will get onto that. In the meantime, what's been happening in the world of TV this week, Jamie?
Yes, I've got some TV news. Go to theboxsetpod.com/news, and I put up anything that titillates my brain. So I pop up all sorts of stuff. There was recently an article I've put on there from the Den of Geek. Den of Geek's brilliant. If you go on there, their site's amazing, and they've got a list of the 30 movies currently being turned into TV shows. Mm-hmm. 30. So usually it's the other way around. You flip reverse it. TV shows eventually get made into films, sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Yeah.
Well, 30 films are being made into, because TV's massive these days. It's as big, if not bigger, than film. Yeah. Films like Big is being made into a TV show. No Hanks involved, which could be the slipping point, but that's getting involved in it. The Devil's Advocate. Al Pacino film where Devil is in charge of a law firm. That's being made into a TV show. Fatal Attraction. They're making the Bunny Boiling classic into a TV show. Fox are getting involved in that. That should be quite interesting. Ghost. Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore. Their amazing film is being made into a TV show. I mean, they could spend a whole episode just making ceramics around the pottery base. That's a whole episode's worth. Hitch. Will Smith's film. A great film. And I always thought when I watched Hitch, it would make a good TV show. It's quite a simple formula. A guy said, in losers up with women. Other stuff includes In the Heat of the Night. Now, that's going to be interesting. That's a Sidney Poitier classic film from the 60s about racial divides in South of America. That's been into a TV show. NBC are working on that. Limitless, the film with Bradley Cooper and Robert De Niro in. Mm-hmm. That's been made into a TV show. Bradley Cooper's even producing that, so he's going to make some extra cash out of it. Minority Report, Spielberg's doing this. The film he made with Tom Cruise, that's been turned into a TV show, and Spielberg's company are devising that and developing it. Lastly, on their Problem Child. You remember Problem Child as a kid, the film?
Yeah.
Oh, I always remember the vomino scene where all the kids are on the ride and they just vom one after another, another vom and another vom, and it's just an avalanche of vom. But I loved Problem Child and that freaky kid. I wonder how old he is now. He must be in his 30s, sat in his underpants. But anyway, they're making a TV show out of Problem Child. other stuff includes Rush Hour. They're doing a Rush Hour Jackie Chan, Chris Tucker stuff. They're doing that.
So you know, it'd be great to get Ollie joining in on this, wouldn't it? Should we just get him
involved? Shutter Island. Shutter Island's been made into a TV show. The DiCaprio film, which is very good. School of Rock.
Sorry.
School of Rock's been made into a TV show. So there's loads of stuff being turned into films at the moment. Here's a good one, Howard. Truman Show.
Oh,
turning
what?
Turning that into a TV
Holy
show.
Holy smoking.
Early days for this
who
one.
Who can do... Let's get Ollie to join in on this.
Yeah. Okay. There's so much top... I mean, it's an immense and amazing list.
Oh, what's going on with this number he sent me?
Come on, Ollie.
That's as delicately as I can... There we go.
Here we go.
It was my fault. I was dialing it wrong. Here comes Ollie Richards from Empire Magazine.
Hello.
Morning,
hello.
Ollie.
Hello, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Good, thank you. We just failed to call you three times then. So you join us mid-pod. We're already recording, Ollie.
Okay.
Right, is there anything you want to talk about off-air? Have you got any... are there any gangsters after you at the moment? Anything that you need to tell us off-air? Because we can always pause
you got
it.
Any queries about your fee?
There are none that I'm aware of, but, you know, if they're any good at their jobs, then I wouldn't be aware, I guess.
That's true.
Let me just clarify, you're not getting paid for this,
Ollie.
All
right, I'm hanging up now.
Ollie, I've just been discussing with Howell. I've been on Den of Geek. Do you go on Den of Geek, the website?
Every now and again, yes.
Well, on there, they've got a list of 30 films being made into TV shows. And it's an insane list of films we've made into TV shows. Truman Show has been made into a TV show, Ollie. What do you think of that?
That's not a bad idea. I mean, I know it's a really, really popular thing now because it's, I guess it's, I wonder if it's kind of a cheaper way of carrying on a lot of things that, yeah, they try sequels to things they maybe don't do so well. Like, yeah, things like Hannibal going to TV, all sorts of things. Truman Show could be a good idea. I think it's quite a hard idea to sustain across a full series,
now, right? Because it's in need of such a resolution, isn't it? Unless he finds out in the first episode, he figures it out in the first episode, and the rest of it is the escape. That now that's kind of a prison break situation, isn't it?
I don't know about that one. What about this, Ali? Give us an idea, right? I'm going to go through a list of these films we've been into TV shows. You just go good predictions for whether they'll be good or bad. Okay.
Okay.
Starting off, Uncle Buck.
Oh, brilliant.
That'll be brilliant.
But the problem with... Sorry to interrupt already.
Go for it.
The problem with Uncle Buck and Truman Show is surely the lack of John Candy or Jim Carrey from those things. Like, how can you possibly cast somebody else in those parts?
That is very true. I do think with Uncle Buck, you might... the saving grace might be that a lot of people are not going to be old enough to have necessarily seen the film. So anyone who has, yes, you're always going to miss John Candy.
Yeah,
if they've got to taking the idea and going for anyone who's below about 30, then they might be fine.
They've got to get Culkin involved as well. Give him a cameo.
Oh God, that'd be so creepy.
He's such a weird looking man, isn't he? He was never meant to grow up.
No, bless him.
Face is weird. Here's another one, School of Rock.
God, no interest whatsoever. God.
Shutter Island.
Whoa.
Again, it's far too reliant on a twist, I think, for that to be able to work as...
Yeah.
I don't know if you can sustain that. But, you know, there's so many things that you think, God, that will be terrible, and then it works.
Yeah, you never know. It depends who's behind it a lot of the times, doesn't it, with these things? Because if you've got good creators, good showrunners, it can make a difference. Because they're making Rush Hour. What about Rush Hour?
I didn't like the film, so I'm not particularly excited about the idea of there being a TV series. Yeah,
couldn't agree more, but this is an example of when you get a good showrunner. Bill Lawrence, who did Scrubs, he's one of the writers and the executive people behind it, and he's brilliant. I love Scrubs, and if he can do some work with it, you might get some good stuff out of it.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
What about this Problem Child?
Oh, my God, why are they resurrecting that? No one liked the films in the first place.
Oh, no. 7-year-olds liked the films in the first
place. I think I was one of them when I saw it. They didn't like it.
And guess who? They've got the writer of the film The Hangover to start writing Problems.
Really?
Oh, did he write the sequels as well? I mean, it's really...
Minority Report. Spielberg's behind this one. He's producing it.
I think great idea. Yeah. Really, that could definitely make a TV show. That's just That's a really obvious one to do, because yes, they can just do a crime procedural, but in a way that hasn't been done before. So yeah, totally on board with that.
Could also be like the next Star Trek type thing. Yeah, it's one of those worlds that has so much philosophy and theory attached to it.
Yeah, it's got a natural kind of gimmick thing that could work throughout a whole series, for a number of series, doesn't it? It's just got a natural sort of like...
And yet it's got depth as well.
It's completely. It's one that you can see. You don't need that explained what that TV show would be, which exactly. I think is probably the key thing that a lot of them need, really.
Marley and Me.
What?
I have neither read the book nor seen the film, but knowing what happens in the end...
Yeah,
yeah.
That's going to be, you know, sure, be kind of a depressing TV show.
You know, I'd love it if every episode ended with a dog dying. Like a really cute Labrador puppy.
A different dog.
Oh, that would be brilliant. Limitless.
Is that the Bradley Cooper one?
Yeah.
I can't see it. But, you know, again, maybe if they get the right showrunner.
Yeah, In the Heat of the Night.
Oh God! My knowledge of that film is not good enough.
What's that?
It's Sidney Poitier.
It's a Poitier film from years and years and years ago.
Oh yeah, is it like Mississippi? Is it? Is it like South?
No? Yeah, I want to say that is correct, and I have seen it, but I haven't. I saw it about 15 years ago, and I mean it's a well-regarded classic, but
yeah,
I couldn't give a proper opinion on whether that would make a good TV show or not.
It's very specific to the time it's set in, isn't it? I don't know how it would work. Maybe that's
what might work with these things. Shutter Island stands out as like a world that is very dense, and again, the problem is the twist. If you can get that out of the way, or change, like Fargo did, you know, just change the story completely, use it as an inspiration rather than a retelling of the story, then maybe.
Yeah, because when Fargo came along, I genuinely thought that it was going to be awful, that TV show, and somehow they made it amazing.
Well, it's true of so many of these things, isn't it? It's like when Hannibal started, people thought, God, that's not a character you can sustain across TV. And I know it's been
cancelled.
It's all up in the air now. But over four seasons, I know it's got huge, it's got massive fans of it, and loads of people say that it's done it really well. So, I think, like you said earlier, it's not really necessarily about the idea as we understand it from the film. It's about if they get a good showrunner who finds a really interesting thing to do with it.
Yeah, because here's another example of one that I think will be good, even though initially you think not because of the showrunner. The Devil's Advocate, the Al Pacino film.
Oh, wow.
Remember that?
Yeah, I guess that could work. Well, you know, kind of Satan running a law firm. I can see that working.
And it's got John Wells, who I believe did like, what's it called? He did West Wing. ER.
Oh, so, you can't mess with that then, can you?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good example. So there's some 30 films turned into TV show. Den of Geek. It's worth a look, actually. That's fair.
Wow. I'll have a look through that.
Lots more news on theboxheadpod.com/news. Now, Ollie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
So Ollie has great credentials. He's a brilliant film reviewer and nice guy to boot. Ollie, we've got questions for you as your life as a critic, but you're a big fan of TV as well. Let's start with the question we always end with for people, which is one of those pub questions. You are getting on a spaceship, you go into outer space, you're never coming back, and you're only allowed 3 box sets to come with you. Now, this could be... maybe we should separate, because it's Ollie, maybe we should go film and TV separate. So you're allowed 6. Everyone else is going to want to kill you on the spaceship, because they've got 3.
I'm happy to go with the standard one. If you just want to give me the 3 box sets that everyone else...
All right, okay.
3 box sets. Okay.
3 box sets for TV.
So, one of them would have to be Friends.
Oh,
really?
I've seen every episode at least 5 times, but I can always watch them again. It's the one show that if it comes on, I'll happily watch 6 episodes in a row, because I'm a desperately sad person.
Let's delve into that again.
You see, for me, it's Frasier that I can watch time and again, and it's still brilliant.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But let's delve into that in a minute. That's number one.
Second one would be... The West Wing.
Yes, Ollie. Nice. You've now made your way into our spaceship. Well done.
Because I've watched it twice, but it's one of those shows that I think you can keep watching again and finding new things.
Yeah, I've been around the whole thing 3 times now, which is quite a lot of time.
That's great. And the third one would be... I'm wondering if I should take something that I've never got round to.
Yeah, go on.
I mean, there's 2 that I've never got round to, and both of them you might hang up on me immediately.
go for it.
I think simply because of the two that I haven't seen, that is the longer one, I would take The Sopranos.
So you've never watched The Sopranos?
No, I know. Bad person.
And what do you do for a living again?
I'm a film and TV journalist.
We say this a lot on the box set. It's like people email us and go, how come you haven't mentioned X? And it's like, actually, when you sit and you look at how many box sets there are,
it's vast.
You're talking about hundreds. I'm amazed that the human race has managed to make as much as they have in a short amount of time, you know?
There are so many. And it's the thing is, when it gets to a point where, you know, I couldn't have jumped into The Sopranos four seasons in or something.
No.
Start from the beginning. And I'm terribly old, so I am from the days where things were, I think they were still coming out on videotape when I was younger.
Yeah.
And so I had to wait until the whole thing's finished. And then there's something intimidating about having, what, six or seven series or something.
It's daunting.
To watch, exactly.
It
I've
is daunting.
I've seen a couple, but I haven't seen the whole lot, and I will at some point.
I mean, it is great. It's not one that we've argued about this before, because I would pick West Wing over Sopranos, but it is such a massive novel, and I'm not sure if I will ever watch it again, whereas with West Wing, I definitely would watch it again.
I think you'll absolutely love it.
Yes.
It is amazing. It's just immense. I can't see why you would regret putting it on your spaceship, Ollie.
I've no doubt that I will love it when I get around to watching it. But, you know, I've got to watch Friends again, so...
Yes. Let's talk about Friends for a moment, right? Because, obviously, it's on Comedy Central all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife was a massive Friends fan. So we've got the box sets and we're watching it every day. And when you watch that, you do realise that... when you compare it to the laugh a second comedy of something like what's it called? What's the bloody big one now?
Big Bang.
Big Bang Theory. It is much less intense than that, and yet it's really, really good character comedy that they kept up. And scene by scene, they're just really, really good comic setups of quite a large ensemble cast. And there's nothing quite like it that's been since, I don't think.
No, I think so much of it is to do with chemistry.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those rare shows where you never heard that the people didn't like each other. They clearly all really did get on.
Mm.
And they're all such good comic actors. I don't think they all get the credit for how good they are, particularly people like David Schwimmer and Jennifer Aniston. Jennifer Aniston, I think, is just one of the best comic actresses there has ever been.
I agree.
Some of her line readings in that, and her slapstick stuff as well, superb.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they got to know as the series went on. They started to read what the actors were particularly good at and would play towards that.
Yeah.
I think there were times when they got a bit too schmaltzy about it. Like, I cannot rewatch any episode where Chandler's being sincere.
Yes.
As soon as he's doing his sincere voice, I have to turn it off because it makes me feel so uncomfortable. When he proposes to Monica, it's just awful. But there's sort of around season four, there's just so much brilliant stuff in there.
My favourite thing to do with Friends is when you rewatch it is just watch Chandler's weight fluctuate
as he goes through various coke addictions.
He went through a really bony thin stage and then he got bloated, and it was just it was a ride and a half.
We can't be too unkind about that, because he was having problems with addiction. To prescription drugs.
I agree with your
gaming theory, but I feel a bit cruel making fun
of him, it's like a cruel drinking game.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, it wasn't amazing, and he was one of the few actors that he was allowed to actually write with the writers. He was part of the writing team in a lot of ways, wasn't he?
Yes, he was the only one who was allowed in the room with them.
Wow.
And he's a very funny man. I think maybe the others didn't want to. I think it was, from what I understand, it was more one of his interests rather than the others were all locked out.
He's
a very, very, very funny man.
I heard a similar thing on West Wing with Bradley Whitford, who played Josh Lyman. He was allowed to be part of the writing process at times on West Wing as well.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah. Read an interview.
Let's talk about comedy for a second. I'm going to make a criticism now of critics, Ollie.
Here we go.
I want you to defend critics, right? This is a half-baked theory.
Okay.
I think comedies are treated much more cruelly by critics than dramas. I think comedies are a lot harder to do. I tried to make a comedy once. It was very difficult. With some very funny people. And I think it's really hard. And I watched, just this week, I actually went to watch a film that got, I think the Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes and stuff gave it about 40%, which is bad. The new Will Ferrell one, Get okay. Hard. Right? And I actually think that it is funny. I laughed a lot whilst I was watching it, which is a good measure of a comedy, I think. And it's similar to Anchorman. You've got a couple of people there, Will Ferrell and his mate Adam Watsit, who have got set up their own little system there. And I always quite like seeing something that it might not be perfect, but there's some people creating something that is, they've managed to ring fence a bit of independence for themselves and things. So I always feel like flying the flag for them a little bit. And then when I saw the reviews, I was like, that's well hard. I mean, maybe 70%. Did you watch that film? My theory is this, Ollie. You have to watch a lot of things. You have to review a lot of things.
Yes.
And you go into the cinema to the press screening, and it's part of your work day. I wonder whether critics in general aren't in the mood for comedy.
Mm. I can't speak for anyone else. And I have to say, I haven't seen Get Hard. So I can't make a specific judgment on that. But I think I semi agree with your point. But I think comedy is far more than drama, subjective. You know, in drama, something is really broadly either happy or sad, and everyone will agree that an event is either happy or sad.
Yeah.
But whether or not something's funny is totally down to what you as a person find funny. I don't go in and watch things as a critic. I go and watch things in the same way that I would if I was just going to cinema to watch something that I just fancied seeing. I'm not putting on a different hat. So if something makes me laugh, it makes me laugh, and I will review it based on that.
Yeah.
The only thing I could possibly say is that maybe a lot of critics are older, so maybe some of the films... that some of the comedy films that are given poor reviews that then younger viewers say, this is hilarious. It's just a difference in the sense of humour between generations. Very broadly speaking, I know there'll be people of 60 who will find fart jokes incredibly funny.
Oh, yeah. I went to watch Ted 2 on the weekend, and I thought it was one of the worst comedies I've ever seen. And
you seen that, Ollie?
I have. I reviewed that for Empire. It's interesting. It's something that I didn't really spot in the first one. But those films, both Ted films, do not contain any jokes.
No, they don't. It's just... in fact, there was one joke in it, and I'm going to try and remember what it was, because it really made me laugh. And I actually turned to my wife and said, that's a joke, rather than just taboo. Just saying something taboo, making a black joke, for example.
Exactly,
which used to be funny when Family Guy first came out. You make a black joke because it's the taboo that you're not allowed to do. So everyone's kind of laughing at the idea of not being able to do something. But he's set that world up so much now, and he's successful, that you get used to it. Your palate gets used to it. However, at the end of the bloody film, which I almost walked out of, and I've only ever walked out on Burke and Hare, which is the other worst comedy I've ever seen. But at the end of it, people clapped. And this is my point. Like, you say that you go and watch things as a normal person, but most people, I saw a statistic the other day, most people go to the cinema twice a year.
Yeah, I can understand that.
So their investment in it is so much greater. And yes, the people clapping were younger, so your point, I think, is exactly right. That perhaps for them, that taboo thing was still
funny. How many stars
did
you give it, Ollie?
Two.
Yeah, it's generous.
Your point about him, his belief that something becomes a joke if you put the word black guy in it is just terrible. But there's a horrible thing at the centre of it, that the people who are not made fun of are his idiot bear who works in a supermarket, and his slightly depressed single friend who seems to not be able to bring himself to do anything except go to the gym.
Yeah.
But he doesn't poke fun at them. Everyone else is made fun of. And that's the thing that I think gives it this horrible cruel streak. That if you're going to make fun of everyone and say that you're an equal opportunity offender, make fun of everyone. Don't make fun of everyone else except yourself, because that's just basically bullying.
You've just been like a doctor that's diagnosed why I didn't get emotional at the end of that film, because I can get emotional at the end of any bad film. Like, if they do a sentimental thing, I can cry. And this is happening more as I get older. Yet with this film, it came to a point in the film that you'll know because you've watched it, where you're supposed to be moved. And I couldn't care less. I just couldn't care less. And I was like, this is a guy, I pretty much like everything I watch. End of. And this just didn't do it. It's just atrocious. And again, like I was saying about Will Ferrell and Adam Watts, ring fencing a bit of freedom. I think that's great when that happens. But this is a real another side of that, which is that Seth MacFarlane, I think those people owe it to everyone who doesn't have creative freedom. They owe it to themselves to get a few people and put it through their filters, you know, get some notes on it, make it a better film. But it's almost like it was so arrogant to just go, no, this will do. It was almost like a first draft.
Yeah, absolutely agree. It felt like a film that was trying to make up what it was as it went along. It didn't seem to have an idea of why it was existing. And then all those things have just, you know, we won't tell you a joke, we'll just show you something you remember. Like, there's that terrible, sorry, I don't mean to keep dwelling on how bad Ted 2 is.
No, do it.
But there's that awful moment where they go into that marijuana field.
Yeah.
And you spot for a second that Mark Wahlberg is looking at this leaf, and you think, oh, that's like that moment in Jurassic Park.
That's
quite funny. And then he turns his head, and think, oh, that's quite a cute little throwaway reference. And then they really just labour it, and it's just, they go through the whole scene until the payoff line is Ted saying about plants, they move in herds. Yeah. They move in herds. It's like, that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense, because they don't.
No.
And so it's just labouring the joke, and the music comes in and everything.
That actually sounded quite funny, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no joke there. Well, that's just, hey, do you remember stuff?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, well, that worked for Peter Kay for a long time.
Ollie, have you ever been to watch a film in the cinema and there's been a round of applause at the end?
It happens quite a lot at big press screenings, because they ship a lot of people in. They get people in from the film company or friends of the film company who will applaud. But generally, if a film was good, yeah, you will clap. I particularly remember the end of Guardians of the Galaxy. There was a lot of clapping and whooping. Whether I've been at a normal screening, as if I go to some rarefied screening.
with the plebs.
I don't know if I've been just generally in the cinema and people have applauded.
I've had one Gladiator.
Really?
Everyone went in the cinema.
Oh, thanks, James. Got to edit that now.
Yeah. They went mental. And you know what? I stood up and applauded too. It was one of those moments where you couldn't help getting carried. I got carried away, you know. It's the amazing, the music in that film, and just what a performance from Russell Crowe.
All right, so you haven't seen Get Hard. You do agree on Ted 2, so that's good. Let's talk about Batman, right? We were talking about films being made into TV series just before. I think that... So I went to watch the new Batmans. They're not new anymore, 10 years old, but I went to watch the latest Batmans and hated them. Hated them. Because I felt... I think Jonathan Ross... we were interviewing him, and I think I agreed with him... in that I like my comic books to still have some energy of comic book, in that they should be shorter and they should have some sense of fun. So you can do the dark, you can do all that, but I just found it so long, particularly the second one, The Dark Knight. I just went, bloody hell, it's 2.5 hours long.
I just now heard Ollie gasp.
I needed. But there's like 9 endings on it, carries on forever. Now, I thought I would get... I bought them on DVD this week, and I watched The Dark Knight again. I see a lot more in it now. Now that I'm not sat in the cinema needing a Wii, which might have been the problem, I saw a lot more in it. But it was still 2.5 hours, and it still felt, the last 15 minutes, I was like, get on with it, just wrap it up. Do you think there's big films like that... that would actually, because what they're trying to do is explore a world more than a 90-minute thing can, do you think that would have been better with the same cast and the same director as a TV series?
That's a tricky question, because, A, that would never happen.
Yeah,
you're
that's
just
true.
Not going to get all those people
caliber.
For a TV show. In that particular instance, No, because I love all three of those films. I know there are a lot of people who hate the last one, and on second watch it wasn't as good. Mm. Second one, I think, is superb, and I think you're insane. but I think what Christopher Nolan did with his world, he did brilliantly, and he did what I think you should do with any of those kind of comic book recreations is create a version that's not been seen before. That is not to say that couldn't have worked equally as well on TV, but I think it would have been different. Mm-hmm. I always get slightly frustrated by the reaction that a lot of people have to comic book adaptations, and this is slightly off your point.
No, go.
But when people get really annoyed when something is, they're presented with a new version of something, like, say, for example, the Jared Leto Joker in Suicide Squad.
When people
see that for the first time, they go, oh, that's not what the Joker's supposed to look like. The Joker's supposed to look like this. He always looked like this in the comics. So that's not what people are doing, and there's no point in just directly recreating something that existed in a comic book and just putting it on screen.
No.
There's no merit in that. And that's also not what comic books have done for years and years and years. The whole thing with comic books is that they have an arc, and that ends, and then someone else comes along and reinvents it and does a new version. Mm. But for some reason, when you do that on film, people seem to get more upset about it and say, this isn't like it is in the comic book. And things like, you know, the new Spider-Man is going to apparently be following the ultimate version of Spider-Man as opposed to the amazing version of Spider-Man. And that seems to be fine. But if you do something that is just entirely your own recreation that is not taken directly from a pre-existing comic, you are messing with things that are not to be messed with. And I do not understand that kind of preciousness.
I think it's like the idea of, like, don't try and please the dweebs. Yes. Because you can't go out there and just try and please the dweeb. Because you'll end up just getting trapped in a corner. Look what they did with Zack Snyder, who's doing the new Batman Superman. Yeah. He did the Watchmen film. And he was so scared, you could tell, of offending the fans of the graphic novel, because it is amazing. I've read it and everything. But the film is almost like page for page version of the film, and the film's a bit rubbish because of that.
Totally agree. And that's the thing, but the comic book nerds, you've got them already. They're coming. They're not
even
the people,
if they hate
they're
it.
Not the people you need to pull in. The ones you need to interest are the ones who've not got an inbuilt interest in whatever that comic book is.
Well, I think you're both right, but I understand it, because I think it's the same as going to see a band live. You know, next time you go and watch Lady Gaga, for example, Ollie, you'll want her to deliver Paparazzi in the way that's on your CD. And when you see the artist being inventive with it, and you've paid your money and you've bought your ticket, and I think that's what we're dealing with the comic book fans. They can't wait for this thing that they love and hold so dear. They can't wait for their imagination to be writ large in front of them.
They've not been out of the house in a year. They've not showered.
No, I think that's insulting. But I think the balance is, and I think Christopher Nolan did get the balance kind of right with Batman in retrospect, because you have the gadgets and you have the characters and all of that, but you have enough of a new world created and enough of a depth. I just think that he just got, again, too much freedom, just got carried away. Just, there's no need for something to be 2.5 hours long, Ollie. There's no need.
There is. A film needs to be as long as its story is. If its story is 90 minutes, it should be 90 minutes.
But there's like five endings between 2 hours and a half, and 2.5 hours.
I think maybe you've just misunderstood what an ending is.
It's all right to think something's awesome, but also say, look, no bladder is built for this.
It's of course, it's okay to think something is great, but also have issues with it. But there are so many, that there is no, a great film, I think Roger Ebert line, that the best films are not long enough, and the worst films are always too long. There's no defined, a film is not better for being 2 hours. If a film has enough to fill 3, even 4 hours, and have you scintillated at every moment, then that's how long the film should be. I've seen plenty of films that are 90 minutes long and thought after 50, Jesus Christ, we can just wrap this up, there's nothing happening. And
which works as an argument, apart from when you look at TV series. You love The West Wing, Ollie. Yes. There are stories in different episodes of The West Wing, which if you didn't have a set amount of time, perhaps could have benefited from being 45 minutes instead of 27 minutes or whatever it is, you know, 43 minutes, whatever. And my argument is that with a little bit, I don't want the producer system all over the place, but with a little bit of discipline, you'll do that thing of keeping more people than just you, Ollie. You love Batman. You're that main audience.
Are you suggesting that The Dark Knight, one of the highest earning films in history, might have been a little bit more popular if they cut it down?
Yes,
just
cut it down. I'm suggesting it should be illegal to go beyond 2 hours 17 minutes.
I think there is a point in that Christopher Nolan would work. He'd make an awesome TV show because he's so good at creating a world and gradually building that world. And I think that another example of that is the Wachowskis, I think, are better in TV form because I've watched Cloud Atlas and I've watched The Matrixes, and they get gradually worse. And Cloud Atlas is good, but it's just full of ideas and it's too big. And I've watched the new TV show on Netflix, Sense8, and it's brilliant. And it's like they're allowed to just build the world a little bit more, and they have so much fun in that world, and there's so much more opportunity to experiment within it. And I think some directors and sort of creators of stories work better in a long format, in a TV format, than in film.
I think you're absolutely right. I haven't seen Sense8 because I've kind of lost all interest in the Wachowskis.
Yeah, that's what I had too, but honestly, give it a go.
Oh, I will do. I'll get around to it. But I think you're absolutely right. There are some storytellers who are better suited to something where they can really take their time. And yeah, because TV is such a different thing from films. You can't, it's almost ridiculous to compare the two, because in TV it becomes so much more about slowly unwrapping a character, whereas in a film you've got to do that extremely quickly and set up a story and conclude it all in a very, very short space of time, whereas TV you can let it breathe much more. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There are certain storytellers who that medium just suits them more.
Can I make a suggestion, Ollie?
You can.
Do you think that to some degree your job is pointless?
Oh!
Now, let me explain this.
Ouch.
And us doing this box set, right?
Oh,
maybe
you.
All of us should just quit.
Oh, no, hold on.
And I'll tell you for why, right? My arguments about Christopher Nolan, that I felt the same way about Interstellar, which was like, oh, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Just
jaw-dropping.
You don't need to hammer the point, though, because the point, it doesn't make sense in science, so don't bother. Just it's beautiful. Leave it at that. And that was the thing with Batman. You don't need to remind us what your point is. However, he is who he is. And isn't it great? Like, well, I went to drama school, and there's some people who are entertainers who would be at the end of the pier doing comedy, and there's some people who are artists. And you can sit down and you can watch those artists do a piece, and it can be brilliant for 20 minutes, and then you can just really want to go for the pub and think that it's a self-indulgent piece of toss for the next 20 minutes. However, that's who they are. You can't change them, because that's when they're great. When they're at their greatest, they've got to be given the freedom that they've got. Same with Will Ferrell doing what he does. Same with Adam Sandler doing what he does. Same with, you know, David Lynch, whatever. The question is there any point in us, you know, what are we doing this job for? Are we here to guide people? Or are we hoping that our comments will help form what becomes accepted? Because should we be trying to turn these people into things they're not?
I don't think any critic should be, whether any are, is trying to turn people into anything. I always say, and I don't think there are a lot of people who say it is a pointless job, and it's very hard to argue that it's a job that is essential, because it's not. I don't consider it my job to say whether something is good or bad. It's not for me to tell you whether you will think something is good or bad. But what the job is to highlight stuff that is great. Like, you talk about people like Christopher Nolan. I don't think people would know who Christopher Nolan was if critics hadn't gone mad for Memento.
Right, yeah.
And just said, this film by this guy you've never heard of is brilliant, go and check this out. And you can say that of so many of the biggest directors now. You know, Sam Mendes making Bond films. American Beauty, it had big names in it, but that was not going to be any kind of huge thing on its own. It's about when you find something that is new and special and you want to bring that to people's attention. We all see a lot of reviews of stuff that is terrible, and that's part of the job, and also they're a lot of fun to write. But I don't think any critic would consider that their job is to decide for people what they should or shouldn't go and see. If you're doing it right, you should be like that mate that hopefully everyone has got, where you trust their opinion. I talked to so many of my friends, it's like, well, what do you think of that film? I said, oh, it was rubbish. Well, why did you think it was rubbish? Oh, it just wasn't very good. And you know, can't necessarily articulate what they think about it because they're not doing it constantly, and there's no reason to. But as a critic, it should be your job to be able to look at something and say interesting things about it. Say,
yes,
don't think this works because of this, but this works. But this is like something that happened in another film, or this guy does this better. It's more about opening a discussion about something and having people engage with the film.
I totally
and maybe
agree.
Give them a view that they wouldn't necessarily have been able to put into words themselves, or something that they might not have thought of. And I know with the critics that I like reading, I read them think, that didn't even cross my mind. That's a really interesting thing. I did not spot that thing. I'm going to go and check out this other thing you've recommended because of how you've spoken about that. That's what I think it's for.
There's nothing better. You're so right. There's nothing better than when you read a review that nails why you didn't like something or why you did like something. I remember once hearing a Johnny Vegas talk about the Sex and the City film.
Oh, brilliant.
And he totally nailed why it
the
was
false
not...
false emancipation of women.
It was
great.
He just nailed it. Johnny Vegas went on this rant about it, and it was brilliant because he just totally got it.
A feminist rant.
It was really... I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was so
he said it's the
ball.
False emancipation of women and the idea that women's liberation means being absolute... towards men and only caring about makeup and high heels and how big someone's it does women a disservice.
Yeah,
which I'm sure he'd love girls
it
as
is,
a result.
And it is great. And after, another example is after the Mad Men finale, the season finale happened. I wanted to see immediately what critics thought and what was the reaction. And to also to get an in to sort of, because I couldn't initially after I watched it, I couldn't sort of initially come up with any kind of feeling of what I thought about it, good or bad. And it was good to read what people thought and read and articulate, hear other people articulate it in different ways. It was fascinating.
I've got a question for you. What film do you really not like that most of your peers really did like? And you just went, oh.
Oh, that's a good question.
Thanks. What do you think of A Serious Man?
Do you know what? I haven't seen that one.
Right. A Serious Man, which ones? Oh, that's the Coen Brothers.
That was another one that I went back and bought because I hated it so much. So I bought it and I hated it again.
I tend not to, and this is borderline sacrilege.
Ooh.
I tend not to be a big fan of Terrence Malick.
Right.
Which one's Terrence Malick?
Terrence Malick's the one. He did, the Thin Red Line?
Thin Red Line, Tree of Life.
Oh, yeah.
And I, certainly his, well, maybe that's not quite fair. His first couple of films, I think, are absolutely brilliant. But as he's gone on, I think he's become really dull and like the old man who's not quite sure what's going on anymore and is trying to make comments on things that actually turn out to be very banal but are done in an extremely long-winded, pretentious way.
Yes.
And I'm going to get... There'll be so many people, film fans, who'll be screaming at this right now.
But no, I'm sure not.
He's just somewhat... He leaves me completely cold now and just... I think he overly labours points and does all these really clichéd things.
Like the end of The Dark Knight.
I just never want to see someone walking through a cornfield at sunset again while the camera sort of twinkles around.
Do you know, I watched that on a plane and it was perfect for the plane. It was like, you know, when you're sort of half asleep and flying back from America and it's like, I just want to not be going where I'm going. It worked in that situation, but I think possibly only in that
situation. So do you get slapped down in the office on a regular basis when you argue Terrence Malick films?
Fortunately, unfortunately, I no longer work in the Empire Office. I'm a freelancer. I work from home, so there's no one to clap me down.
Oh, you're like Helen then. Helen's been on the pod as well.
Oh, exactly the same. Yeah, yeah.
Ah, very good.
But I wouldn't. I always kind of kept that opinion to myself because it would
What was the biggest argument over like something banal like a film that was? I'd love to hear like a real vitriolic voice.
Oh, there was a huge, huge argument about Darren Aronofsky's The Fountain. Have you seen that one?
Oh, yeah.
And there was between the camp who thought it was very weird but really interesting, and someone deliberately trying to do something a bit odd and actually doing that properly. Like, what they'd set out to do, they had clearly done. And the other camp who thought this was the most unbearable, twee, pretentious, navel-gazing nonsense. And there was some very spirited argument about that.
Yeah, because that becomes really personal, doesn't it? It's like, because you're essentially saying to people, you are a bunch of wankers.
Exactly. There are others. I think, like, was the Avengers contentious? No, that wasn't contentious, but there have been many of the big... Oh, the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie. There were a couple of people who really liked it.
I really liked it, Ollie.
Oh, so boring.
Sorry. No, you see, the thing is, though, I watched it first. I think I watched it in a vacuum, really.
What's wrong with you?
I just missed the first one and then went to the cinema and watched the second. And I thought, this is brilliant, because it's the first time I'd been introduced into that world, so I really enjoyed it. And everyone went, what do you mean? And I didn't enjoy the first one then. So it was weird.
The first one is pure joy. The first one is just brilliant, good, fun, action, comedy, cinema. The second one decides, hey, we're important now. Let's make everything dark and give everyone a depressing backstory because that's what people want. No, they don't.
Whilst we're on Disney, we could be interviewing Olaf next week.
Amazing.
How good is that?
That is terrific.
The thing is, he's going to be plugging another film. He's like,
Pixels.
7 minutes to sort of go, what's the other film? And then, now will you sing about summer, please?
He'll be used to it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Ollie.
Thank you so much, Ollie.
My pleasure.
Is there anything that you expected to bring to this podcast? Because all we've done is ask you questions. Is there anything particularly pertinent that you're on your soapbox about at the moment?
No. No, I've thoroughly enjoyed being questioned and being told I'm useless.
No, it's brilliant.
Go stare in the mirror for a bit.
They're
just
all
think about
questions,
life.
And as usual, you've changed my mind about everything that I think. So
that's very nice to hear. Thank you.
Thank you, Ollie. And will you come back and talk to us sometime?
I would absolutely love to. Thank you.
Brilliant, Ollie Richards, freelance film, not tied to anyone, not tied down. Jeez. There we go. Join us next week with hopefully Olaf on the box set.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pod?